From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the show are VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain and political and foreign affairs correspondent Shayna Estulin. Welcome, Cindy and Shayna.
Thank you.
Well, here are the issues. Tensions between Israelis and Palestinians have escalated further as Palestinian militants in Gaza fired hundreds of rockets into Israel, which responded with ramped-up airstrikes that spread to cities and towns beyond Jerusalem. As the escalation continues, the U.S. calls on Israeli and Palestinian leaders to de-escalate and reduce tensions. A ransomware cyber attack on May 7th forced the Colonial Pipeline to shut down the main part of its network. The Colonial Pipeline is one of the largest in the United States. It can carry roughly 3 million barrels of fuel a day over 5,500 miles from Houston, Texas to New York. The FBI has accused a criminal gang called DarkSide of the ransomware attack. The major pipeline shutdown has caused gas shortages and panic for motorists. North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida have declared a state of emergency. House Republicans voted to oust Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney from her position of House Republican Conference Chair, the third highest leadership position in the Republican Party. Cheney's repeated rebuttals of former President Trump's claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him put her in a precarious position within the Republican Party. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy will now push to unite the party and focus on the 2022 midterm election, where the GOP will try to win back control of the House. And U.S. President Joe Biden met with lawmakers this week to find common ground on his economic recovery plans, which include spending on infrastructure, childcare, and education. The talks come after the United States reported a weaker than expected recovery in hiring. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Shayna, I will start with you. This escalation of violence between Israelis and Palestinians does not seem to be easing. What is the root cause of this, and what does each side want?
Wow, the root cause. I mean, you'd have to go back generations. This is a conflict that is older than any of us, really. And at this point, there has been so many twists and turns to this conflict over the years that both sides are really entrenched in their own narrative, and it's hard to sort of get either side on the same page. You really saw sort of a shift in recent years, especially under the Trump administration, with Israel signing normalization agreements with Arab powers. And according to Israeli officials, it sort of felt like they could ignore the Palestinian issue because it was no longer sort of a bargaining chip with other Arab countries. But it's clear that you can't ignore the Palestinian issue. It's not just a small flare-up. This is a very big flare-up. And it's not only now between the Israelis and the Palestinians, but you're seeing violent fights break out within Israeli cities where Arabs and Jews normally live together in peace. And there's violence and fighting breaking out between the two groups. So I'm really worried not only about this escalation between the Palestinians and the Israelis, which is unfortunately sort of typical, but this new sort of disturbing development. When this is all over, how do you get those two groups who normally live in peace together, Jewish Israelis and Israeli Arabs, to heal?
Yes, that is a very concerning issue. And Cindy, in your recent report on this escalation, you said the United States is calling on Israeli and Palestinian leaders to de-escalate and reduce tensions. So what is the role of the U.S. in this issue? And should the U.S. be taking a more proactive role?
Well, yes, that's right. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken has faced a lot of questions from reporters because for several days now, as things continue to escalate, and we've just seen nights of terror with both Israelis and Palestinians running for cover from rocket fire. So Secretary Blinken has faced questions, well, you keep calling for de-escalation, but it's obviously not happening. So what can the U.S. do? And Secretary Blinken has dispatched an assistant secretary, Hadi Amir, who has decades of experience, to the region. And he has held talks with Palestinian President Abbas and with the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. And the U.S. is trying to mediate. Of course, the U.S. has close ties with Israel and does not have any direct channels with Hamas. So the U.S. is appealing to its allies in the region, to Jordan and to Egypt, to talk with Hamas and to really prevail on both sides not to escalate this further, because we have seen a dangerous escalation, and the volume and the intensity of Hamas attacks, I think, have caught some by surprise, as the Biden administration is now forced to deal with this age-old Israeli-Palestinian issue, as Shana said.
That's right. And also the Hamas leader said this week that the rocket attacks would continue until Israel stops, in his quote, all scenes of terrorism and aggression in Jerusalem and Al-Aqsa Mosque, unquote. So really, what is he talking about with this reference?
There were evictions taking place in East Jerusalem, but of course, Israel would argue that Hamas intentionally raining down rockets on civilians is not the same as what they're doing. And for instance, in Gaza now, targeting Hamas militants, Israel says they're doing targeted attacks, and unfortunately there are casualties, and so the moral equivalence isn't there. But what happens is every time there's a flare-up, it not only plays out on the ground between the Israelis and Palestinians, it also plays out on social media. If you just read Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, there's a lot more support for the Palestinians among young people, amongst Democrats, amongst celebrities. So Israel really struggles to sort of get its message out in a way that it wants to get people to understand its narrative. They claim to have the moral high ground. And specifically on the issue of the Democrats, when I speak to Israeli officials and when I speak to sort of establishment Democrats, they always have the same sort of public line, which is that Israel is a bipartisan issue, that there's support for Israel amongst both parties. But there really has been a shift in recent years, especially as you have these new freshman Democratic lawmakers like AOC, like Rashida Tlaib, who are very vocally supportive of the Palestinians. And so, yes, you'll still have establishment Democrats come out and support Israel. And certainly Biden finally broke his silence and came out and said he spoke to Netanyahu and that Israel has a right to defend itself. But quietly, Israeli officials, and sometimes not so quietly, will say that they are concerned that Democrats are just not as supportive of Israel in the way that they used to be.
To that point, President Biden has reversed some of former President Trump's more radical steps with Israel by restoring U.S. funding for Palestinians and resuming diplomatic contacts with Palestinian officials. But other Trump policies still remain in effect, such as the moving of the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. So are policies of former President Trump contributing to this conflict?
I don't know if it's necessarily fair to put this on Donald Trump again, because this is a conflict that has gone back for generations. Certainly, Trump was much more supportive, obviously favored Israel. I think the fact that Netanyahu got closer to Trump is one of the reasons the Democratic Party has moved away from Israel, because anything that was sort of seen as embracing Trump was then seen as being toxic or radioactive to the Democratic Party. So I don't think that necessarily helped Israel. But in general, when we're talking about Biden's approach to the Middle East, I think the fact also that he took a couple of days to come out and publicly say anything shows that he really doesn't want to be involved in this. And he's not the first U.S. president who has not wanted to get involved in the Middle East quagmire. Famously, Obama, who was the president when Biden was vice president, had this pivot to Asia, really wanted to keep the focus away from the Middle East. But then we saw the Syria conflict break out. We saw ISIS emerging, and Obama got a ton of criticism for not paying enough attention. And so what's happening now, this conflict breaking out between the Israelis and the Palestinians, is more evidence that U.S. presidents might want to ignore what's happening in the Middle East, but that region just won't be ignored.
Cindy, your last thoughts on this topic.
Well, I think that some would argue that the Biden administration is trying to return the U.S. to more of a neutral broker in this Israeli-Palestinian conflict and restoring, you know, most administrations in the past have given some aid to the Palestinians, humanitarian aid for hospitals and that kind of thing. And that is what the Biden administration has restored. And Secretary Blinken did make clear that there is a distinction between Hamas, which is a terrorist group, raining rockets on Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and Israel defending itself. And Blinken has said that Israel does have a right to defend itself, and Palestinian civilians also have a right to live in security. So the U.S. is trying to strike a balance, and most of all, to stop the loss of innocent life, families and children being killed by these indiscriminate attacks from both sides.
Yes, and we will continue to follow developments of this story and even wonder how and when it will end and what are the consequences of all this violence. Well, here in the U.S., Americans are experiencing gas shortages across the southeastern and eastern parts of the country due to a cyber attack on a main pipeline. Well, Shana, how did a cyber attack lead to gas lines and shortages of gas?
This, first of all, just shows how vulnerable critical infrastructure here in the United States is, because the group behind this criminal hacking group, possibly based in Russia, according to U.S. officials, it's not state-sponsored. They're just a group of hackers. They publicly are now saying they didn't even intend to cause this much damage. They just wanted to get some money. And so even something that wasn't done intentionally caused gas stations in several states in this United States to completely shut down, states of emergencies to be declared in several states, people hoarding gas, panic buying. And this is just one incident. There have been something like 2,500 ransomware attacks in the past year. And it's just exploding now as more and more Americans move everything online, especially because of the pandemic. It's a very, very, very big problem. And it always seems like the United States is sort of scrambling to keep up, Kim.
That is so true. And U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm says it is not a gas shortage, but a gas crunch for regions that typically rely on Colonial for fuel. Cindy, for people who need to gas up their cars, this is a serious problem, as Shana pointed out. And the White House must be feeling the pressure. So what are they doing?
Well, they are feeling the pressure, and they have been all over this issue with the energy secretary and the transportation secretary and the White House press secretary and everybody, you know, talking and explaining what has happened. And I think what is behind this, you know, the U.S. federal government is required to have defenses for its power grid. But private pipelines have no requirement to implement cyber defenses. It's voluntary. So this is something that you have some. There's actually a bipartisan legislation introduced in the House by a Republican and a Democrat to bring legislation in to say that this is not enough, that private sector companies, this is the biggest U.S. fuel pipeline, which was now down for several days, and something needs to be done to regulate this so that they have to have some measure of cyber defense in this day and age.
Well, just looking at that, they went after a pipeline company. What was the point of that? I know, Shana, you pointed out that this dark side, this group of criminals, they have gone after companies just to get money. So what would be the point of going after Colonial Pipeline?
I'm not sure if the intention, again, based on their public comments from these hackers, and I don't know how much, you know, how big a grain of salt we should take with what they're saying. It just seems like they've targeted them perhaps because they're, as Cindy pointed out, their cybersecurity defenses were weak and they would be able to get money out of them. I don't think they intended to shut down gas stations, but it caused a lot of damage. Colonial Pipeline is getting a lot of criticism for not having a robust security system in place. And that's really part of the problem, as Cindy pointed out, that private companies don't need to have a level of security that the U.S. government may require for their own agencies. President Biden has just signed an executive order that might start changing that. It's targeted towards U.S. agencies to increase the level of cybersecurity, but because a lot of private companies work with the U.S. government, the hope is that it'll start trickling down to other companies. But there is a push by Congress, specifically Mark Warner, who's a Democratic senator, who's a leading voice on this issue, to require private companies to do more, to start reporting when they get hacked, because right now they don't have to do that. And so the U.S. government doesn't have all the information it needs to fight hacks and ransomware attacks, again, at a point when there are more and more of them every year.
Yes, that is so true. And so, Cindy, just looking ahead, what can Americans expect in terms of being able to gas up their cars? And could this be like a domino effect, it affecting the food supply next?
Well, for right now, it looks like there's good news, actually, Kim, in that Colonial saying that it has restarted operations. Actually, that the company itself had taken them down after this cyber attack as sort of a proactive measure. So it's back up and running, but it did caution that it will take several days for the supply lines to be fully restored. So I think hopefully Americans hearing that will say, okay, you know, we've got to few days here where, you know, there some gas stations might still be closed and long lines at some gas stations, but things should be getting back to normal. Part of the problem in some areas, at least, especially in the South, was panic buying and people taking their, you know, their red extra gas canisters and filling those up. I think if everyone calms down a little bit and realizes that this biggest pipeline is back up, it's going to take a few days, but things should be returning to normal, hopefully.
Yes, okay. Well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look at the latest move by House Republicans on their vote to oust high-ranking Republican leader Liz Cheney. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain and political and foreign affairs correspondent Shayna Estulin. Well, House Republicans voted to oust Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney from her position of House Republican Conference Chair, the third highest leadership position in the Republican Party. In comments after the vote, Cheney said, "I will do everything I can to ensure that the former president never again is anywhere near the Oval Office." So, Shayna, what would be Congresswoman Cheney's next move with the statement? It doesn't appear that she's backing off from her criticisms of former President Trump.
No, now that she's no longer in a leadership position where she sort of had to play diplomat and play nice to the members of her caucus, the gloves are really coming off. And she's planning on going on sort of this campaign trip where she's going to be making a lot of media interviews and just traveling around getting this message out that the Republican Party needs to purge Trump from its party and that they need to tell the truth. You know, this is her big thing, that Republicans know that the elections weren't stolen and that they're just lying to the public and to themselves because they want to please Trump and please Trump's base. And it's going to kill the party. It's going to bring the party down. It's going to bring the country down. And the Republicans have to be the party of truth, the party of the Constitution, the party of conservative ideals. The big question, though, is the Republican Party that party anymore? I mean, it is so in lockstep behind the former president, and he has so much support amongst Republicans now that is she going to sort of be just a lone voice with a small band of anti-Trumpers behind her, or is she going to be able to change anything?
Cindy?
Well, I think that Shayna has framed the issue, and basically the core issue, it would seem to me, are the events of January 6th with the attack that we saw on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Trump. And Cheney, she's called it an insurrection, and she said that it was basically ignited by former President Trump with what she calls, and President Biden and others call, the big lie that the election was stolen from former President Trump, which we know there were more than 60 court cases which showed no widespread fraud. So this is a real question for Cheney and for others about the truth. And some Republican leaders like Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, saying, well, we need to move on. We need to focus on the next elections. And Cheney is saying, well, first of all, we can't go along with something which is not true, and we need to face up to that before we can move forward.
Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy is trying to move on and to unite the Republican Party. So will this ousting of Liz Cheney from her position give the Republicans the unity that they're hoping for?
I would say probably not, because she's not going away quietly and she intends to make her voice heard. You know, the big sort of challenge coming up for the Republicans is the midterm election of 2022. And having a party that's not unified is never a good thing going into an election. The good news, though, for the Republicans is that news moves so quickly in this country that this might be an issue now, but there might be 1,000 more news stories before the midterms, and this no longer may be relevant to voters. So I don't know how concerned Republicans really are about this. And again, how much sort of power Liz Cheney might have to purging Trump from the party. I mean, as I said, he's so popular that at this point, it doesn't seem like she'll be that successful in doing so.
Before we move on, Republican Representative Elise Stefanik of New York is campaigning hard to replace Cheney and has the endorsement of top Republicans. But other conservatives, including some in the House Freedom Caucus, worry that she's not far enough to the right for them. So will she be more likely to be Liz Cheney's replacement? And if so, what will this mean for the GOP?
Well, I would say right now she seems to have the momentum, and she is from New York, and in the beginning, or I think most of her political career was seen as more of a moderate, but she has now turned to fully embrace this notion that somehow former President Trump was cheated and should actually still be in the White House. Right now, she would look like that she has good chances. And I just wanted for our audience to just to state that Liz Cheney is, of course, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. And that is a real political dynasty in the U.S. And it just goes to show how much things have changed for the Republican Party, and that now you have Democrats and many independents who were critical of the January 6th attacks and critical of the statements of former President Trump, now in lockstep with Liz Cheney and the Cheney family. And that's quite a bit of an irony.
Yes, that's a very good point. Also this week, looking at President Biden's meeting with the House and Senate, President Biden, he's meeting to try to gain common ground and to find opportunity to work together on getting his legislation passed. His proposal on infrastructure is a top priority. So how will he get bipartisan buy-in on this with Republicans still balking at the expense of it?
The joke, as you might recall amongst D.C. journalists, is during the last administration, every week was infrastructure week, although there would be some self-inflicted scandal or some unforeseen crisis, and that would no longer be in the cards. But the reason why infrastructure week kept coming up with the Trump administration is because it's such an easy sort of win for an administration, which is also part of why Biden seems to be leaning on making this happen, because it's something that both parties really support. The United States has crumbling infrastructure. Everybody wants to see roads and bridges and tunnels rebuilt and jobs created because of it. But as you pointed out, Kim, there is a big gap on what exactly would be in this bill and how to pay for it. The Republicans really want a targeted bill that just focuses on physical projects like rebuilding roads, like rebuilding bridges. But the Democrats have a much wider definition, which would include clean energy and social issues like elder care, for instance. And then when it comes to paying it, Biden wants to raise taxes, which obviously Republicans are against. Biden doesn't really need Republican support here. They can force this through the Senate. The problem is that Biden keeps promising bipartisanship, and so he actually has to follow through on that at some point. And also, there are other pieces of legislation that he wants to pass eventually that will require Republican support, like on immigration, like on police reform. So if he gets Republican buy-in on this bill, then maybe he can get some goodwill in the bank and get their support down the line.
Also, the month of April showed weak employment growth, and I'm sure the coronavirus pandemic is playing a big role in this. With the stimulus money, Cindy, there are reports that people do not want to return to work. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have seen some critics of the stimulus package saying that, but some others would say, well, it's particularly in the hospitality industry, restaurants and things like that, perhaps people have not been offering a living wage. And maybe that's what they, you know, need to think of as hopefully more Americans can return to going out and having a meal and perhaps taking a trip and staying in a hotel and that sort of thing. So this gets us back to some of the, you know, age old disputes that Democrats and Republicans have.
And Shana, what are your thoughts? You know, there are a lot of employers out there who are saying, well, you know, I need people to come in and work. And people don't want to work. I know the stimulus checks, I think they're due to run out in September.
That's right. What was actually, I saw today trending on Twitter is people talking about the fact that employers want them to come back, but like you need to pay us a living wage and better benefits. I think some employees are starting to feel like they might have more power in a way that they didn't before because companies need workers. So it'll be interesting to see if that sort of shifts. But it is a Republican argument that unemployment is just too good right now, so people don't want to go back to work. But I don't know how long that's going to last. I mean, people want to work. People want to feel useful. And there are a lot of jobs that are not available right now, the kind of jobs that people want or jobs to further people's careers. People may not want low-paying jobs right now. So I do have a sense that this will sort of get back to where it needs to be. But for right now, the Republicans are really running on this issue that the stimulus package is actually hurting the economy. I mean, that's something we're just going to have to see down the line.
And that's all the time we have. I want to thank my panelists, VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain and political and foreign affairs correspondent Shayna Estulin. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.